Blog Talk Radio.
In the beginning was the beat, and the beat was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace.
To the Us Lifting Us Thursday night call, and we've got a very vital topic that we really need to ingest, and we will be right back. And the topic tonight is Mayotte our worldview? Is Mayotte our worldview? We will be right back at the end of We Are the Drum. Once again, greetings, family. And yes, we are the drum calling our people to power, liberation, and sovereignty. And we welcome you to the Dare to Win, Us Lifting Us weekly program, where we have a sobering conversation about the economic and political plight of Black people and the solutions that will lead us to economic self-determination. My name is Brother Thurman, and I'm with a board member of Us Lifting Us, and I will be serving as your host this evening. And joining us for the evening's discussion is our guest, Brother Kimbizi, who serves on the board of directors of Us Lifting Us. And family, you can be a part of this call in two different ways, and that is by telephone at 929-477-2789, and press 1 when you're ready to speak, and give us about 15 to 20 minutes for us to get started. And also you can tune in and listen by internet radio. You go to www.usliftingus.com. That's www.usliftingus.com. And you look for the gold bars that go from left to right, and to the right side you'll see Ulu Radio, and you click on that tab, and then you scroll down and you'll see a globe with the headphones, and it says Listen Live, and you click on Listen Live. Those are the two ways that you can be a part of the program, and we definitely welcome you to participate in this very vital conversation. And I'd like to, Brother Kimbizi, welcome you and thank you for being on the call. And how are you feeling this evening?
Good evening, Brother Thurman, and thank you so much for the welcome. Good evening to the Us Lifting Us family. I'm excited. and looking forward to tonight's conversation with you.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you so much. And so, Brother Kambizi, the topic once again is Mayat, our worldview. So, Brother Kambizi, tonight we find ourselves in the midst of a global pandemic, the coronavirus, that has already infected 7,159,292 people, claiming 407,855 lives. And so in the U.S., there are, just in the U.S., there are 2,019,000 people infected and 112,888 people that have died from the virus. On top of this, 2 weeks ago, the Minneapolis police murdered Brother George Floyd by placing their knee on his neck, and on his neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds until he died. Since then, hundreds of thousands of protesters have demonstrated in cities across the country. And if that's not bad enough, 45 million workers have filed for unemployment, all but collapsing the national economy. I'm baffled, Brother Kambizi, that you would ask the question about Mayat and worldview. What does Mayat and worldview have to do with all that is going on in this country and around the world right now?
Well, thank you, Brother Thurman. You challenged me right from the beginning. So let me say, first of all, that I'm encouraged by the global expressions of outrage in the killing of George Floyd. These eruptions and explosions and uprisings have forced America to come to grips with its 400-year-old racism in a way we have not seen in a very long time. I think it's telling that were it not for these rebellions in the streets of America, that Brother Floyd's murder might have been swept under the carpet. But it is the magnitude of the current crisis that forces us to ask this question about Ma'at and worldview. First, how do we as black people analyze what is happening, and what is the most effective solution that we need to implement? Yes, we know racism is the problem, but why, after 155 years after the end of slavery in America, is racism just as virulent in 2020 as it was in 1865? Well, if our worldview, and let's assume that our worldview is Ma'at, if it's accurate, it provides us with an analysis of events that are impacting us, and equally important, an interpretation of those events. In other words, it gets at the root cause of those events and helps us to formulate an effective solution or plan of action. So the first point that I think we want to make tonight, Brother Thurman, is that your worldview is the means by which you interpret your reality. And it's very important that you are aware of your worldview, because if you haven't intentionally constructed your own worldview, then more likely than not, you're operating from somebody else's worldview, and that can be deadly. The reason racism is still so virulent and vicious is because it is supported by the economic system of capitalism. Now, Brother Thurman, if you think about it, all the conversations that all the talking heads, everybody's talking about, you know, racism and why it's so hard to get a dent on it, and why it still persists in the ways that it does. No one is tying racism to capitalism. And all of the people, I won't say all of the people, but I would imagine that a lot of people that are marching who are outraged by the murder of George Floyd, and they want some kind of reform, they want to change the system, they want to make it better, make it right, make it fair or just or equal, if you ask them, yeah, but if, in order for that to happen, we're going to have to come to grips with capitalism, we probably would get a very different reaction. Capitalism, we must realize, is how America generates its wealth and exercises hegemony over the entire globe. Capitalism steals the surplus value of the millions of workers and funnels that wealth to the 1% at the top of society. When the masses of people begin to protest and rebel against capitalism, capitalism will send in the military to crush any opposition so that the system can roll on. So let me give us a definition of worldview. It is the set of beliefs about fundamental aspects of reality that ground and influence all one's perceiving, thinking, knowing, and doing. One's worldview is also referred to as one's philosophy, or one's philosophy of life, or one's mindset, or their outlook on life, or their ideology, or their theology. As part of our oppression and exploitation in America, Black people have had forced on us a Euro-American-centric worldview. And this is what Dr. Carter G. Woodson was trying to get us to understand in his book, The Miseducation of the Negro, that he wrote in 1933. We have been given the same philosophy and brainwashing as white America. As a matter of fact, Brother Thurman, you talked about this several weeks back when you were talking about the book Addicted to White.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we've embraced white values of white superiority, of individualism, of materialism, of competition, of militarism, of violence, patriarchy, and last but not least, greed. In such a mental condition, we find it difficult to think for ourselves, and the only way we can break loose is by embracing an African world view. In other words, our worldview is the glasses that we look at the world through. And if we're looking at the world through a white Eurocentric set of glasses, we've got to take those glasses off and pick up a pair of African-centered glasses, and that's what Ma'at is. It is an African worldview, and it consists of seven core principles: truth, justice, righteousness, order, balance, harmony, reciprocity. We'll explore these in our next segment, but I just wanted to put those out there because what this is asking us to do, Brother Thurman, is it's asking us to begin to look at the events swirling all around us and start asking these questions. Well, what is the truth in this situation? What would real justice look like in this situation? What would righteous behavior look like? Where is the order in this situation? And when Ma'at talks about order, it's talking about the order of the cosmos. In other words, the planets, the sun, the moon. There is an order in the cosmos that is irrefutable. The Earth revolves around the sun, and it does so in such a precise way that we wind up with a 24-hour day. We wind up with weeks and months and seasons and years. And all of that happens with such consistency that the world makes sense to us. If it didn't happen that way, then we would have chaos all the time. So that not only is there an order in the cosmos, that same order is reflected down to the functioning of the very atoms in our bodies. So there is a relationship. And the challenge that we find ourselves facing is we are trying to get our own personal and communal lives in alignment with the truth of the universe, with the order of the universe. And when we achieve that balance, and there's that word balance, then our lives will begin to make sense. We will find ourselves enjoying life on a planet that is sustainable and viable. There will be harmony amongst people and groups, between all life forms, and there'll be reciprocity. In other words, we find that the universe gives us life, and in turn we give life to others. So there's a cosmic ordering of how life should proceed on the planet, and that was what enabled African civilizations to thrive and to flourish for tens of thousands of years. We have gotten away from that order. And so in less than 2,000 years, the planet is inching closer and closer every day to climate collapse, to species extinction, including the human species. And we find ourselves in this tremendous crisis, and everybody's freaking out because they don't know quite what to do. Well, that's what happens when you have a faulty worldview. And so what we're arguing for tonight, Brother Thurman, what we're trying to make the case for tonight is to recognize that this crisis, the pandemic, the economic collapse, the social collapse brought on by the murder of Brother George Floyd, are the universe's way of saying to us this worldview that has captured the entire world does not work. It has never worked. And we must change our perception of the world and base our behavior on a set of principles that is in alignment with cosmic order. So let me take a pause there, Brother Thurman, see if there are questions, give you a chance to react to anything that I've said.
Yes, very powerful message you've given us so far in the community that you're bringing in, defining things. Family, you can join us at 929-477-2789, and you press the number 1 on your keypad when you're ready with a question or comment. Brother Kambizi, this is just... So a very special message, and so I was taking note of most everything you're saying. You were talking earlier about changing the system. Maybe what we'll do is we'll take this musical break real quick and come back and let's continue the conversation.
Okay, Brother Sam.
Welcome back, family, and we want to continue this powerful conversation, informative, very informative, and the topic tonight is Maya our worldview? Is Maya our worldview? And we're being fed in so many ways by Brother Kambizi. So Brother Kambizi, how is Maya a guide we can use?
Well, thank you, Brother Sermon. For example, if we look at what are some of the solutions being talked about in the aftermath of the murder of Brother George Floyd. So they're talking about reforming the criminal justice system, defund police departments. These are all what we would call reforms. And what they don't do is get at the root of the problem that's driving the behavior. So we have to consider, for example, when Christopher Columbus came to the shores of the New World in 1492, there were 20 million indigenous people living in this part of the world. In less than 50 years, that 20 million population of indigenous people had been reduced to less than 500,000 folk. We have to understand that this country started as a white settler colonial project, and that so rapacious and so vicious were these early people who came here that they had no problem with exterminating 19.5 million people. Do we really think that they have a real sense of the humanity of other people? That there is really any notion of justice and equality that runs through them? Not only did they exterminate 19.5 million people, they then drug another 10 million people out of the bosom of Africa and enslaved them to do the labor in this hemisphere. So how do they get to be the arbiters of justice? How do they get to be the paragon of what is just and what is right? How do they put that kind of mantle around themselves where they can put on black robes and sit on benches and dispense justice for the very people that they either have exterminated or that they have enslaved for 400 and 500 years? Do you follow what I'm saying? And so because we are operating from the same worldview as they have, this seems to us to be normal that we should petition them for justice. The truth of the matter is that they are incapable of doing that. And so this business of putting in place reforms, that just is tweaking around the edges. And 10 years from now, they'll throw that right out the window. I mean, you know, they are notorious for writing treaties that they don't follow. So we have to be sober enough and mature enough to understand who it is that we're dealing with. And that is what, if we use Ma'at as a guide, that's what it shows us. Ma'at is an interconnected system of interdependent ideas, each supporting the next. If you remove one principle, the whole thing collapses and no longer works. So let's restate the principles one more time for those who may have joined us late. Truth, justice, righteousness, order, balance, harmony, and reciprocity. Ancient Kemet as a civilization perfected a way of inculcating these ideals into their children such that they produced a civilization of black geniuses that lasted for thousands of years. I mean, that's how powerful this system, this worldview is. It enabled them to produce multiple generations of geniuses. And so I would invite our listeners to Google the 42 declarations of Ma'at. And Ma'at is spelled M-A-A-T. So Google 42 declarations of Ma'at when you have a moment. And what you will see is that these declarations were recited in the morning and again in the evening by each member of the society as a means for guiding their individual and collective behavior and guaranteeing that each member of society was upholding the principles of Ma'at. Now, many people who might be listening tonight might be thinking, well, I've never heard of these 42 declarations of Ma'at. But if you're familiar with the Ten Commandments, you do your biblical research, you will discover that the Ten Commandments really are a shortened version of the 42 declarations of Ma'at. In other words, the crafters of the Ten Commandments were looking at the 42 declarations of Ma'at when they wrote the Ten Commandments. That's another story for another day. We're not going to dwell on that. So, in other words, Ma'at was a way of life for the people that led each follower to be his or her best self over the course of their lifetime. And this resulted in a communal society where everyone had access to food, clothing, shelter, education, and health care, and the pursuit of happiness as a human right and not as a privilege reserved only for the wealthy. Yes, sir.
Yes, brother. That is powerful right there. Now, that is almost like a magical formula. And so it makes me question, well, why wouldn't we just readily go grasp that up today and tonight, and everyone have access to food, clothing, shelter, education, health, and pursuit of happiness? Wow, that's powerful, brother.
It is powerful. And unfortunately, Brother Thurman, say what?
Yes, go ahead.
Now, I was just going to say, when as you are saying that, we live in a society that puts the label of utopia on that. In other words, this is some kind of fantastical dream that isn't possible to achieve. But again, that's their worldview. Our worldview says not only is this possible, we've done it for tens of thousands of years, you know. So, and that's why it resonates so much with us. Let's use, for example, the murder of George Floyd as a case study. Let's apply a better understanding of that utilizing Ma'at as a worldview. We know that the police killed Mr. Floyd.
Brother Kambiz.
Yes, sir. Yep.
Brother Kambiz, before you go into the case using George Floyd as a case study, do you want to take this caller we have on the line?
Sure. Let's do that.
Okay. Caller, we have a caller with the last four numbers, 1111. Please tell us where you give us your name and tell us where you're calling from and with your comment or question.
Hotep Afghan, Brother Kebalon from Gabriel Prosser City, some call it Richmond, Virginia. And the brother was leading to use George Floyd for example. First of all, the brother was on point because Ma'at deals with the consequences thereof, it deals with universal order, justice, harmony, and if you compare it to Ten Commandments, in church they tell you thou should not kill, thou should not steal, thou should not commit adultery, but they don't extrapolate. They don't tell you the consequences thereof. If I kill your love, what's going to happen? You're going to kill my loved one. So at some point, without even having any knowledge of religion at all, it's a universal understanding that I got to respect your rights in order for me to have some of my rights. Now, the brother's going to talk about George Floyd, but I'm going to give him a little introduction, right? George Floyd. Now we're talking about law versus justice. They're not the same. The guy that was sitting back there watching, he's following laws. He thinks he's doing the right thing, but is it just? Rodney King. He got three or four cops beating the mess out of him. All the cops were acquitted. That was law. But was that justice? So my ideas with the consequences thereof, and the brother made a good point. He says that what we have now is the result of capitalism. People don't focus on it. They focus on looting and people outrage and the violence and all that stuff, right? But they never deal with how that came about in the first place. When you have a system where you can make all you can at the expense of others, this is what you end up with. So with that said, the brother is on point, so I don't want to stop him from speaking, so I'll just put my two cents word in and let him continue.
All right.
Brother, thank you for your comments. I'm always humbled, Brother Thurman, and reminded that our people understand this. This is not new news to us. This is a reawakening, perhaps, of deep-seated and deep-longing wisdom that continues to resonate in our community. So I appreciate the brother's comment and thank him for calling in and sharing that idea with us. What I was simply going to say about Brother Floyd is that we realize that George was killed because the police who killed him, to them, black lives do not matter. And why don't black lives matter to white folks, especially the lives of black men? So let's dig into the truth of that a little bit. People who have melanin in their skin pose what we call an existential threat to people who classify themselves as white and want to remain that way. Melanin is a skin pigment that causes the skin to appear brown, black, or colored. It is a dominant genetic trait, meaning that when people with melanin have intercourse with people who lack melanin, the children they produce are black, brown, or colored. They're no longer white. We behave towards white people like they are irrational. We appeal to their logic to accept us as equal, failing to realize that white nationalists behave as they do because they are afraid of black and brown people because we have melanin in our genes that can annihilate them genetically. We have to understand the difference. White people aren't stupid or irrational or even demonic. They are scared to death, literally, of our melanin. So as long, and so when the brother made the point about linking this to capitalism, as long as capitalism could exploit black labor for free or at very low cost, and could dominate and control our behavior, America tolerated black folks in her borders. But there has been a profound shift in capitalism, beginning with the desktop computer and robotic technology in the 1980s. Up until the 1980s, there was pretty much full employment in the black community. But starting with the advent of the desktop computer and robotics, that employment number fell drastically, primarily because those factories and industries left the urban cities of Detroit and Gary and Ohio and moved to the Philippines and to Southeast Asia and to Mexico. And now with the recent advances in artificial intelligence, the need for black manual labor has been eliminated. Where we were tolerated from slavery through most of the Industrial Revolution and their factory system, we are no longer necessary as an economic factor in America. Quite the contrary. We are now unwanted competition in a tightening labor market where artificial intelligence and robotics are doing all of the heavy lifting. White working class communities see the writing on the wall. Their jobs are disappearing at an alarming rate, and they lack the training to shift into the new gig economy. So the new solution for the race problem in America is the accelerated demonization of black and brown people, mass incarceration, extermination and genocide, and mass population control via high-tech surveillance state apparatus. With Ma'at as our worldview, we see some truly astounding options opening before us. So that's a rather bleak prognosis. But when we look at our situation through the eyes of Ma'at as an African worldview, it is time we focus our energy on building our own businesses, our own schools, our own health care and elder care systems, and it is not by coincidence we find ourselves uniquely poised to launch a global system of cooperative businesses and institutions that offer ourselves and our children a viable and sustainable future. So in other words, capitalism as an economic model is exhausted. It's run its course. All it can do is continue to pit the various groupings of people in the country against each other, over-police them, brutalize them, murder them. There is no way forward in that system. We have to understand through our own analysis that what is a better path forward for us is to start opening cooperative businesses. Why cooperatives? Because the members of the cooperative own the business. We own and control the businesses, whether we are workers in the businesses, whether we are the community that the business is served by. In a co-op organization, we own the business. That gets even more important because when we talk about these small, medium, and large-scale businesses, what we are also talking about is the means of production, the factories, the technology, the raw material. Now we are in a position where we can make decisions about how these vital resources are used, how the profits that they generate are distributed, and to who and to how much. In other words, we move from being victims to being the operators of systems that we then can shape to determine what kind of destiny and future we and our children will have. Let me pause there, Brother Thurman. There may be questions on the line, or I may have said something that you want to comment on.
Yes. Presently, we don't have anyone that have called in. And callers, family, you can reach us at 929-477-2789, and press the number one on your keypad. And I'm sure you were going to continue on. As you were, I was reflecting as you were talking about these cooperative businesses. I thought back to a few minutes ago. You were talking about the artificial intelligence and it's tightening the labor market. Would we, in having our own production and manufacturing facilities, then we are in control, as you said, we are the ones that are making the decision. So then we could, operating as a cooperative, using cooperative economics model, and also you're talking about Myat, would we, and I'm asking you a question, are we would use Myat as operating, you could say, spiritual principles that we're following, we would be more likely to be critical about not doing away with, we would be more critical about making sure that more of our people have work versus just letting our manufacturing centers be full of artificial robots. Am I making any sense in the question I'm trying to ask you?
You're making perfect sense, and you're absolutely right. One of the things that becomes clearer and clearer to us as we do our research, as we do our analysis and study, when we talk about Ma'at as a worldview, it really sets the stage for how people relate to each other. We begin to relate to each other on the basis of mutual respect. As the brother who called and said, we recognize that there are consequences to what we do. So if I harm you, then that means I have opened the door to harm myself or to harm my loved ones. So we are caught up in this web of life, this garment, where we really have to take care of one another. And that mindset, Brother Thurman, then means that the businesses that we operate also reflect that consciousness, that awareness. So yes, when we open a business, we're going to make sure that the people who work in that business are paid not only a livable wage, but a thriving wage. We're going to make sure that that environment in which they work is healthy and safe so that they are not exposed to pathogens or to dangerous equipment that could cause them harm. We're not going to put chains around the exit doors to keep people from stealing something. So in the event of a fire, then people get trapped on the inside and they perish because the safety exits were blocked. Those are not the kinds of things that happen in a Ma'at society and in Ma'at businesses. Now, here's an important, I think, and very crucial difference for us, Brother Thurman. Most of us at some, well, I won't say most of us, but many of us at different points in our lives have worked for these major corporations, and we see how really what you get paid is just enough to get you through to the next week. If you really count your pennies, and you're very careful, you might have a dime or two left over at the end of the week after you've paid your bills. The people who own that business are walking out of those each week and each month with millions of dollars. And so here we are just eking through trying to make it paycheck to paycheck while the owners of the business are going home with millions of dollars. And we call that free enterprise. What we did not understand was that the millions that the owners walked away with was the surplus value that we as the workers created. In other words, whatever that business generated was a result of the work that the people who were doing the work created. So if at the end of the year the business had a $10 million profit, that profit really needed to be redistributed back to the people who did the work. Not the, all of the works is combined, maybe get a couple of $100,000, and the owners walk away with, you know, with several million. That imbalance, that inequality sets up a society where you have 62 people whose net combined worth is equal to 3.5 billion people on the planet. That's not reciprocity. That's not balance. That's not harmony. But in their worldview, it's okay because it keeps them at the top of the human pyramid. So when we say operate cooperative businesses, what we are saying is we're taking that ownership away from the equation, and we now are stepping into that position as worker owners and community owners of the business so that all of the profits that that business generates now come back to the community in the form of funds for education and health care and elder care, come back in the form of jobs that pay better than a living wage, and then finally come back to the members of the cooperative as a dividend. So you get paid twice. You get your salary, and then every quarter or twice a year, how often it's calculated, then there is a redistribution of the wealth back to the member owners. It's a far more just system, and it means that the society as a whole is balanced. You don't have huge poverty and suffering and a handful of people who have more money than they will ever be able to spend.
Yes.
And so to your question, Brother Thurman, that's how the Ma'at guides how the business operates.
Okay. Brother, we've got another caller on the line, and we need to take a musical break. But before the break, let's check out the let the caller into the conversation. With the last four numbers, 5921, 5921, please give us your name. Tell us where you're calling from and your question or comment.
Yes, this is Abdul Halim calling from Chester, Pennsylvania. Nice conversation. I just wanted to, I guess, ask a question. If our idea situation with my aunt is, we'll say 100, and you know, the less zero, like as far as what we are not, you know, what is not established yet. Like, how far along are we on this road, or how can we say, like, what the percentage of established action are we involved with in this principle, like as far as numbers of people or people subscribing to this principle? Because it sounds great. So, like how many or where can you say we got this, like, going? Or how far along are we with this spread? Or, like, in that mode, like I would think, it sounds like a lot of things put together. Like, you know, it sounds like a lot of, to me, sounds like a lot of things put together. And it sounds like it's something we would be able to do or put in action. So how close are we to getting this out and to the people, and maybe how many people are actually, you know, subscribing,
Brother,
to this new principle?
Well, Brother Halim, you raise an important question, and I certainly want to thank you for bringing the question down to the pavement where the rubber meets the road. Currently in Us Lifting Us, we have just under 600 members. Now, keep in mind, the way our model works, for it's a $50 annual membership fee to become a part of Us Lifting Us. And then we ask those who have joined, as soon as they are able, to purchase a co-op unit for $1,000, right? Now, when we say soon as they are able, we're not talking about, you know, breaking the piggy bank and hocking the children to raise that $1,000. We have monthly payment plans that allow people to put aside funds on a monthly basis until they generate their $1,000 to purchase a co-op unit. It's from those co-op units, that pooled money, that we then open cooperative businesses. The exciting piece, I think, to this, brother, is oftentimes you hear the expression critical mass. And sometimes we know critical mass is less than 50%, but we often have the idea that critical mass may be as high as, say, 20 or 21%. It may be, in truth, that critical mass is closer to 3%. And so if there's 40 million African-Americans in the United States, that's about 12 million folk that would need to embrace this idea and run with it so that we could see its full potential unfolding. So for every 1,000 members who put up $1,000, that's $1 million. If we had 12 million people, that's somewhere in the neighborhood. I did the math a while back, but it's billions of dollars. And with those kinds of resources, we could meet all of our needs. So we've got our work at the moment is to put the idea out there and explain to people why this is important and how doable it is. In other words, we don't have to have everybody, you know, involved to make this work. What we do need is people who hear this message and it resonates with them and it makes sense with them and they have the resources to put towards this. Then what we say is, like, you know, Marcus Garvey said to our people, you know, up ye mighty race, accomplish what you will. So that our message, every time we get to tell this story, is for every 1,000 people, that's $1 million. And every time we generate these kinds of resources, and so two things happen. One, we're using the resources to open cooperative businesses. So as the businesses gain strength and grow, they begin to turn a profit, And so now we have not only our pooled resources, but we also have the resources of the businesses that we're operating. As the businesses are operating and come online, they're producing jobs and employment for people. As more and more people are employed, that enables them to purchase co-op units. So the system mushrooms very quickly. We're in the process of priming the pump. And so that may be the long way around to answer your question, Brother Halim, but what it boils down to is how many of us in our own sphere of influence can share this idea with those who are like-minded, who can see the vision and can join us in building these institutions. Because we are at a moment in history where cooperative businesses are coming. This is the future. This is today and tomorrow, not next week, not next year. They are going to happen. The question is, where will we be in the process? Will we be leading it? Will we be riding the wave of it? Or will we be watching it go by, wondering, should we have gotten involved and gotten on board? So that's how I would respond to your question, and I hope I'm answering what you were pointing towards, Brother Halim.
Yes, that's a very good answer. It's real inspiring, yeah, to hear that. And, I'll keep in touch. That sounds good.
Thank you, brother, for calling in. Brother Kimbizi, very good conversation tonight. Very good. We need to take just a very, very short break. The time is short, but let's take a quick break. We want to go right ahead and continue with this powerful conversation, very informative conversation that we must apply to our life. And Brother Kimbizi, in the time that we have left, you can feel free to elaborate in whatever manner you feel. I do have a question that I'm sure that you can respond to, and that is, how would incorporating Mayotte in tonight's the topic is Mayotte our worldview? How would more of us being aware of Mayotte and incorporating that, and as you said earlier about repeating it in the morning and in the evening, how would that dramatically move us forward as we come together under cooperative economics?
That's a outstanding question, Brother Thurman. The short answer is that my art as a worldview is both an individual, personal experience as well as a communal and collective experience. In other words, in order for this to work, each member has to be a living, breathing expression of it. And then as we join hands and run together, the synergy of this movement becomes, I won't say overpowering, but the synergy takes on a life of its own. And we begin to grow exponentially because each component, each person in the system is expressing these values. I started a garden a little while ago, Brother Thurman, and I planted some beans and some cucumbers and some kale and some spinach. I put the seeds into the soil, watered it every day, and left it alone. And I don't have to tell you or anyone else familiar with the process of sowing seeds what happened. In 10 days or so, the plant started to break the surface of the soil and began to grow, right? This work that we're doing in Us Lifting Us is organic. When we come on Dare to Win and our other ways of communicating with our people, we are sowing seeds in very fertile soil because, as you have pointed out week after week, Brother Thurman, this is spiritual work. And so these are seeds that are being planted in the spirit and the psyche of ourselves and our people. And as they germinate and begin to come up, then we'll begin to see just how powerful we are. And what I want to just share in closing with our audience tonight is we find ourselves at a historic confluence of a spiritual consciousness revolution, which is necessary because fear and hatred have exhausted all of us and our humanity. We find ourselves also at this confluence of an urgent ecological imperative to shift away from fossil fuel because that fossil fuel is causing global warming and it's destroying the planet towards extinction. We also find ourselves at a point where it is necessary to shift the economic mode in which we live. In other words, we have come from slavery to capitalism, and from capitalism we are going to cooperatives. Cooperatives is the next evolutionary development for the human family. And this is a process that we have been working with, praying about, studying for the last 117 years. In 1903, W.E.B. Du Bois said the problem of the 20th century would be that of the color line. The way we break out of that dilemma of the color line, Brother Thurman, we take the initiative to begin to organize our own cooperatives. We don't have to ask anyone permission. We don't have to petition any other group. We don't have to boycott or demonstrate or do any of that. We have to make the conscious decision to pool our money as sisters and brothers in a family collective and organize these cooperative enterprises and institutions that can provide us employment, that can provide the services and the goods that our community needs, that can give us wealth and dividends that we can pass on to our children. And as we do this, then our children grow up with a very different sense of who they are. They begin to see that they are the lineage of the people who built the pyramids, of who built great civilizations, who gave science and mathematics to the world, and that we now are positioned to guide the planet, to guide the human family into the next stage of human development. We have to do it because our survival depends on it. But I hear the ancestors saying, this is why we came at this particular historical moment. And so this is the work that we have in front of us, and we have all the resources to make it happen. We have the genius. We have the energy. We have the wisdom of the ancestors, and there's absolutely nothing that can stop us. And so as we close, Us Lifting Us is just that. It's us lifting us. Now, the benefit is that as others see the beauty of this, then quite naturally they'll want to do the same thing for themselves. But we don't have to wait on anyone else to do this. In other words, This is how we stop being distracted by all of the stuff that's going on around us and focus in on what is our task, what is our work. And our work is to build cooperative institutions that we own and control, that these are family-centered businesses that benefit ourselves and our children and generations to come. Brother Thurman, I'm going to pause right there and let you close us up.
Brother Kim Beasley, you have done so wonderful tonight. You have closed us up. And we thank all of the listening audience. We thank the callers. And we will be back again Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And, of course, we're going to have Brother Kim Beasley back on to take us further. Thank you, family, all the family, Brother Kim Beasley.
Peace, Brother Thurman. Thank you.